Avoiding scams during the pandemic and always. Experts say scams and fraud increase when people feel vulnerable. And sure enough, this global pandemic is proving to be fertile ground for all kinds of illegal schemes. COVID-related scams have proliferated, with people being sold fake test kits or being asked for private information by so-called contact tracers. The Federal Trade Commission this week estimated that Americans have lost $145 million to coronavirus fraud since spring. Yesterday, police in Pennsylvania arrested 33 people, including 20 prison inmates, for COVID benefit fraud. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The schemes reach into every corner of our lives, from healthcare and shopping to travel and romance. Today on Maine Calling, we will learn how to protect yourself and what to do if you think you've been scammed. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. We have all had it happen. A fishy email asking you to open an attachment or a phone call asking you for information about yourself during the pandemic. It seems like these cons have grown in number and often use COVID-related hooks to draw people in. Today, we'll talk about how some of the latest scams are working, how to prevent fraud, and what to do if you are targeted. My guests, Aaron Fry, who is Maine's Attorney General, and Seth Bofelli. He is an advisor with AARP Fraud Watch, their network team. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you or someone you know fallen for a scam recently? Have you lost money or had your identity hacked? What do you want to know about dealing with fraud? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. And perhaps, Aaron, the first thing I want to say to you is I don't think people in the audience should feel any shame to ask for questions or to reach out. These fraudsters are very sophisticated, aren't they?
That is absolutely correct, and I'm glad that you bring that up, Jennifer, because the reason these frauds and scams work is because a lot of effort has gone into figuring out how to get a person's trust to send along personal information, financial information, and if it didn't work, the scammers would move on. But because it does work, scammers keep doing it, and we need to get these reports of, you know, who's hearing from these scammers, who may have fallen victim to these scammers, not only so that we can try to help the person get some sort of recovery or some sort of remedy, but also because we can collect it up with the other reports that we are getting, share it with law enforcement agencies, with the federal government, to try to stop that activity from happening.
Oh, my goodness. Aaron, I was on the FTC website this morning, Federal Trade Commission website. I saw that in Maine, 1,155 reports related of fraud related to COVID-19. Is this the same database? Is this the same number that you think is about accurate for what you're seeing?
Yes, that's right. And you know what's important to note from that is that that is just this year. And that information not only comes from individuals who reach out to the FTC, but here at the Attorney General's office, when we receive complaints of this type of nefarious activity, right, these types of scams, we then upload that information to the FTC so that we really have two different pairs of eyes on those same numbers to track the activity. And yeah, so not only is that number significant, but there's also been some victimization, right? Some money that has gone out that can't be recovered as a result of this activity.
Okay, so 1,100. Do you suspect that's the tip of the iceberg?
I do worry about those reports that we are not getting, either because somebody feels awkward about identifying that they fell victim to this scam, or because they didn't think of the Attorney General's office, didn't think of the FTC as the place to report this activity, right? You know, maybe it was a sense of hopelessness, or maybe it's that they just didn't know that if they call the Attorney General's office, we have a way to get that information tapped in maybe to help provide them with some direction.
Seth, what kind of scams are we seeing right now, and how are they the same or different than what you see in other years?
Yeah, you know, Jennifer, I always say, you know, there's bad news and good news. The bad news is, just like Aaron said, the scams are spiking. Those 1,100 cases in Maine are tied to about $500,000 in losses. And nationwide, there's been almost $150 million lost just to coronavirus scams or stimulus scams. So that's the bad news. The good news is these are all just kind of variations of the same old scams we've always seen. It's a link that you're supposed to click on that downloads malware onto your computer. It's a voicemail with a phone call with a phone number that says it's from the CDC, but it's really to a scammer. So these same tricks that we've seen and kind of gotten used to over the years, the same protections work. So not clicking on links that you don't trust, not calling back numbers that you don't recognize, screening your calls. All those basic protections are the same things you're going to do to protect yourself from coronavirus scams.
And let me ask you, Seth, there are legitimate phone calls you might be getting right now in connection with coronavirus. For example, a contact tracer may call you if someone you've been in contact with tests positive for COVID-19. What advice do you have to people about who to, you know, when you answer your phone, and a lot of people don't even answer their phone anymore, when you answer your phone, how do you know if someone's legitimate?
I think the thing that you need to realize is that contact tracers, sort of like the census, you know, if you get a call or a visit from the census worker, they're not going to ask you about financial information. They're not going to ask you for your bank account number or your medical account number. They're just going to say, you know, do you know so-and-so? They've been in, you know, they've tested positive. You might want to go get yourself tested. What these contact tracing scans will do is once they make that initial inquiry, then they'll say, we can offer you a mail. We'll send you a test to your home. We just need your Medicare number, or we need your credit card number because it costs $250. So if you get a call that's about contact tracing, as soon as they switch to your bank account information or your healthcare account information, that's when you know it's a scammer.
All right. And at that point, Aaron, what does somebody do?
Well, it's important first to well, not provide your credit card information, I guess, is maybe the most important thing, or not provide your Social Security number in the situation like what Seth described. Try to get that number that you're being called from, if the number is available. I know sometimes it's going to show that it's not presented, but if you can get the number and then you can call it into us, we then upload that number into a database that may help with investigating, you know, not only who it is that's making that call or where that call is coming from, but it also gives us the understanding that there is something that's happening out there right now. There's this scam that is making the rounds, and we can make sure that other individuals who maybe haven't received the call yet have some notice to be on the lookout for that call, so that people are prepared in the event that they pick up the call and the interaction that Seth describes occurs.
All right. Well, I was, again, on the FTC website, and it said that Maine has a really large number of scams that have to do with travel and vacations or online shopping. Seth, tell us about those. What do those look like? What does an online shopping scam look like?
Yeah, you know, it really is. You know, a lot of these are linked to Amazon or some of the other places or online shopping. And this is one of these new realities, right? We're at home. We're doing more shopping over the internet maybe than we ever have done before. And sometimes, honestly, we can't remember what packages we ordered and what we didn't. And so the way that this works is you'll get a text message or an email saying, you know, that looks like it's from Amazon, but asks you to click a link to confirm your address or to get a status report on your package. Sometimes what we've seen, the more nefarious ones, are someone will call you claiming to be a customer service agent from one of these retailers, saying that there's a fraudulent charge on your account, but they can fix it for you if you give them access to your computer. So once you give them access to your computer, now they have information, They have access to all your personal information. They can plant malware or spyware. Sometimes these scams, and they can be really complicated. They'll say, okay, there's a fraudulent $50 charge. We're going to refund you that $50. And then they'll say, oops, sorry, we accidentally put in $50,000. So you just need to send us back that $49,000 and change. And by the time the victim sends this money back, they realize that it was all fake to begin with. And so it's, again, like you had said in the beginning, you know, a lot of times people don't report this because they're embarrassed or they feel ashamed. But these scammers are psychological manipulators, and they're really sharp, and they're always changing their tactics. And people fall victim. Even if they know what to look out for, they can still fall into these traps.
It really is scary. Aaron, I want to turn the clock back just a little bit and ask you about the state of Maine. We've been talking about individuals being scammed, but the state and others as well were scammed early in the pandemic with claims for unemployment that were not really made by the people who owned that Social Security number, owned that address. They numbered in the thousands, correct?
That's right. Yeah, with COVID-19, what we've seen is a couple of categories. So we had the unemployment insurance fraud, where those scammers out there were able to get a hold of enough personal information of Maine citizens and would then apply for unemployment benefits in their name. In fact, my mother got a call from her school asking, "Did you put in for unemployment?" And she said no. You had that going on. You also had a lot of activity around stimulus checks and scammers trying to convince individuals that they can help expedite the receipt of a stimulus check if you just give us a little bit of information to get that ball rolling. So from an institutional level, we did have to pay attention, and it was helpful to get those reports coming in of this activity, so that from an institutional side, you know, we could brace for this activity affecting Maine citizens.
And Aaron, I know that this for a while even held up legitimate unemployment claims while the state sort of tried to untangle everything and figure out how to discern what was legitimate and what was not legitimate. I'm wondering, did we ever find out? Has anybody ever been arrested? Did we find out who perpetuated this?
Not at this time, but there has been a significant dedication of state and federal resources to try to track down and stop that activity, and there was success in preventing some of those resources going out. I mean, that's important too, because to the extent that, you know, some of these scammers were able to get some unemployment benefits before it was identified that they were fraudulently applying, the state of Maine was able, you know, with the information that this was happening, was able to stop on their side these fraudulent benefits going out, you know, saving those taxpayer resources. So no, we don't have anybody yet, but I do know there's a significant federal and state, and this is national, right, with all states working to make sure that if they can find the person, that they will.
We're talking with Maine's Attorney General and also with AARP about scams that are happening during COVID-19. If you have any questions, you can give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post a comment on our Facebook page. Seth, is it true that there are more now? Is there any evidence to support what we're feeling anecdotally, that there are more cases of scams and fraud right now than there were before the pandemic hit?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think if you look at that FTC report, there's a lot of there are tons of coronavirus scams, but there's just as many as the regular scams. So it's sort of like you take a regular scam season and then you throw a whole nother thing on top of it. You know, we always say scammers are going to follow the headlines. And so whenever there's uncertainty, especially when there's government money that's being sent out, they're going to be, I mean, they're sharks and they will be in the water. And we can kind of see this pattern emerging. You know, when the coronavirus first happened and there was a shortage of testing, we saw a spike in test-related scams. When the stimulus checks came out, all the scams were related to the stimulus. They then switched to unemployment-related scams. We've seen in some states when they've had a second wave, it starts over again. And so it goes back to those testing scams. When we get to the point, hopefully soon, where we have a vaccine, we can fully expect to see scammers, you know, here, click this link to get priority access to the vaccine. So there's going to be a cyclical nature of this. So if we're thinking about what are we reading in the headlines and then remembering that the scammers are going to be following those headlines, that's one good way to stay one step ahead.
All right. We're going to go to Beverly, who's calling from Eustace. Hi, Beverly. Go ahead.
Hi. My name is Beverly Levy. Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead.
Yes. My situation is identity theft as an elder. I had someone notify my servicer saying that they were me, and they did a change of address. And I didn't know where to turn, and the property was in York, but I'm in Franklin County. And I was told to try and talk fast when your call came up, and now I'm drawing blanks. But they went ahead and they did a change of address. They claimed that they were me, and they got my banking information. They paid off my mortgage, of which I owed less than half. And the only people that helped me were Consumer Financial Protection Agency. And I spoke with one sheriff did try and help me. His name was Liberty, but he now is involved with the jail, so he's not able to help me. So there's fraud that goes on for us elders, and there's no place to turn. I did talk to the Attorney General at the time, Janet Mills, and she wasn't able to help me. So it's a really bad situation. My email is beverlyal@yahoo.com. If you can help me, either one of you.
Beverly, you still have not been able to get your property back?
No, I haven't got my property back, and I hired a lawyer in Portland. I paid $5,000. He said they have had no authority to do this. This was not lawful. And when I talked, but he wouldn't go to court. Other lawyers won't have anything to do with it. It's because it would involve some officer would get in trouble because you just don't do this. And tell you a secret, I'm 66 years old. I am an elder. And never, ever thought this would happen to me.
Aaron Fry.
Yes. So Beverly, first of all, let me just say it's awful to hear that you have been victimized in this way and that you haven't been able to obtain the relief that it sounds like you may deserve. I guess what I would stress is a couple of things. One, if you could give a call into our consumer protection line, and this might be a good opportunity to let everybody know what that number is. So toll free in Maine, 800-436-2131, or you can call the other line of 626-8849. You know, we can take that report. I'm not sure what conversation you may have had with Governor Mills when she was AG, but we can take that report, and if there's something about it that maybe we can't do, but we know that another agency can, part of what we do is not just dealing with it ourselves, it's also making sure it gets transitioned to an agency or, law enforcement, or we work with a number of different consumer-type entities. So we can do that. The other thing I want to add is that from our office's standpoint, we have beefed up our ability to become more sophisticated in pursuing elder fraud. The governor in her budget included and the legislature passed an attorney general position and an investigator position to specifically target elder fraud. And so, you know, to the extent that there may be a level of sophistication that can take another look at your situation, I just encourage you to call into our Consumer Protection Division, and we can get that routed if there's something that we can do.
Beverly, good luck to you. We've made a note of your phone number, and we'll pass that on to the Attorney General after the program. We are going to take a quick break. We're talking about scams and fraud during the pandemic. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bristol Seafood of Maine. Dedicated to bringing restaurant-quality meals to your kitchen with My Fish Dish, found in the freezer at your local Hannaford. Central Maine Power, committed to a clean energy future for Maine. Learn more at poweronmaine.com. And Maine Farmland Trust, growing a bright future for farming and for Maine. Dig in at mainefarmlandtrust.org.
America, are we ready for this election? This is Brian Lehrer from WNYC. Join me, my guests, and listeners from around the country for a live conversation about the economy and the election. Can the middle class in America be saved? Will young voters have what their parents have? Do their parents even have enough? The election is coming soon. America, now's the time to talk about the economy, jobs, and our expectations.
And that's coming up this evening at 8 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. And tonight at 8 on Maine Public Television, we have a PBS NewsHour special. Following the passing of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, RBG, Her Legacy, and the Court's Future will be broadcast immediately after the PBS NewsHour. Again, that's tonight at 8 o'clock, a PBS NewsHour special, RBG, Her Legacy, and the Court's Future on Maine Public Television.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, watching out for scams during the pandemic and advice about what to do about them. My guests are Aaron Fry, who is the Attorney General for the state of Maine, and Seth Bofelli, an advisor with AARP Fraud Watch's network team. As always, we want to hear from you. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to go to David calling from Bucksport. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to alert your listeners to at least another scam that's going on out there. My parents, who are in their late 80s, received several calls a couple nights ago, late at night, wouldn't stop calling. It was an anonymous number. My mother finally answered the phone and was told that they had won the Publishers Clearinghouse. And this person that called them identified himself, gave him some return numbers, said he's been trying very hard to reach them, and that if they had an email address, he would send them the paperwork for the winning to claim the winnings. And they didn't have an email address, so he sent the paperwork to a UPS store in Bangor where it was picked up. And I have the paperwork in front of me. It's very official looking with pages of Publishers Clearinghouse data, the Business Bureau, IRS, FDIC. This person talked to my mother and father several times, and to my brother about how to take care of the winnings and those things. He's calling them Mr. and Mrs. Millionaire. And I finally got involved and called the gentleman and asked a few questions about his affiliation with Publishers Clearinghouse and why he's answering the phone and not somebody at the clearinghouse, and could I speak to somebody that is responsible for him, and finally found out that he told us that he was the president of the clearinghouse, and his secretary wasn't in that day. And I asked if there would be any money that my parents would have to pay in order to receive the $6.6 million worth of winnings plus a Mercedes-Benz. And he referenced a page that has IRS letterhead where $5,500 would need to be submitted in order to process some IRS forms.
My goodness, David. Two questions. Seth, I'm going to start with you and say, have you heard of this one?
Yeah, absolutely. The sweepstakes or the foreign lottery scams are really kind of one of the oldest ones in the book. You know, and it seems easy to say, you know, you lose 100% of the lotteries that you don't enter. But for folks, it's, you know, it's an excitement. And this one I think is especially targeted towards the elderly, and maybe it's because they're more trusting Maybe it's because those of us who lived through the 70s and 80s were more accustomed to seeing those publishers' clearinghouse ads on TV all the time, which we don't necessarily see that much anymore. But these foreign lottery ones, and again, they know that they're probably not going to get you right away, you know, that you're not going to be convinced right away, but they have very detailed scripts. They would like to keep you on the phone. They like to learn. You know, they ask about you. Oh, do you have kids? Oh, you know, wouldn't you like to buy your son that car he's always dreamed about? Again, they're social engineers, and they know how to get information out of you that then they can turn around and add to their scripts, add to their stories to make their enticement seem even more exciting.
Wow. And Aaron, would you like to see that information David got and find out that phone number?
Yes, and I also want to highlight what David did that we would encourage everyone to do, particularly in a situation like this, and that is that, you know, David validated, or he verified, right? He worked to figure out, you know, who is it that's reaching out to my parents. And, you know, one of the benefits of the internet, one of the, you know, benefits of if it's a government agency that's purporting to call, there are different ways that you can verify who it is that's calling you. And so if somebody says they're from the Maine Revenue Service or from the IRS or from the Social Security Administration, there's a way that you can look parallel to find out, you know, is this something that I should be worried about? So I just want to highlight that what David did there was very good, which is, you know, trying to figure out who it is that he was dealing with, and what he found out is that it was a scammer.
David,
and
thanks
so
for your call. Yeah, we're going to move to Mona, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Mona, go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I wanted to really quickly give you an account of what happened to me. I'm an elder, and I was scammed very badly with identity theft within the last 2 months, and it took 10 days. I was completely scammed, and it was related to, it originated with my, on Facebook, signing up for this organization. I can't quite remember the name because they completely disappeared. They were legit, but they folded. But it was about elder resources, and it was about you know, well-being and all of that for elders. And so I signed up, you know, with my email, and I went to this website. It was fine. And then over the course of a day, I had to verify, you know, with CAPTCHA, those, you know, that basically verify from my laptop. You know what I mean by CAPTCHA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I had to do that 3 times. I'd never had to do that before. And what these scammers were doing was actually getting my IP address. And then what they proceeded to do the next day, it said that I had to re-register all over again, and I couldn't. And then it said, here's the number to call. And all of that was from the scammers that they had imposed on my browser. And I called up, and it was this team from India saying, well, you know, the only way for us to fix this is if we download this app onto your phone. They sounded very sincere. I started to do it, and they said, you know, you have to give us your location, and you have to make the app run at all times. It sounded funny. I didn't do that. But long story short, what they said was, oh, we don't see any banking information. So you need to go to a store and buy a gift card. At that point, I understood what was going on. The thing is, they had sounded completely legitimate, and what they had done was take over this website and basically scam these elders who had signed up for it.
So they'd taken over a website of something that used to be legitimate.
That's something that was legitimate and targeted for elders. So everybody has to be careful for that, because when you do sign up for this, what you're indicating is that you are an elder, and then you know, there are really specific ways in which you can be taken advantage of.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, what I had to do was, you know, this was happening on a weekend, and the phone number disappeared from my phone after I hung up. I called my bank just to make sure that, you know, my PayPal connection to it and all of that was secure. And it was cut off over and over again, so they controlled my phone. My internet service provider told me I needed a new router. Anyway, so I had to cancel my credit cards, my debit cards, get a new phone. It was really kind of horrible. It was like the Wild West. Long story short, what I want to really put out there is that, especially for elders, you know, there really is a vulnerability to having your financial information and payments connected to your mobile phone. And I would just advise everybody who has someone in their family, an elder or someone who can be susceptible to that, to just, you know, make your phones really dumb with regard to credit card and banking information for the time being, because that would have been impossible to protect, I was told later.
Okay, Mona, thank you so much for sharing your story. And Seth, I want to start by just asking you, because Mona was talking about how this was obviously targeted toward people who are older. Is there some place at AARP that people can call to say, is this organization legitimate? Are they indeed doing this good thing for my community?
Yeah, you know, I think one, we do have a helpline for anybody who's fallen victim to a scam. That number is 877-908-3360. But I think one thing in general, in social media sites are kind of notorious for being easy to, you know, it's easy to hack into somebody's Facebook account and then send a link that looks like it's legitimate to all of their friends. So a lot of these scams come from an email message you get from somebody that you already trust, but it's really from a scammer. So we always tell people, if you get a phone number, if you get a link, instead of clicking on it or instead of returning that number, you know, Google sometimes is your best ally. Go on Google, search up that company, and get to their legitimate website. You know, I just, in the last 2 weeks, I got two different emails. One said, there's been a rise in coronavirus activity in your county. Click here to find out more. And the other one said, the second round of stimulus payments will be prioritized by need. Click here to find out more. Both phishing emails, both illegitimate. Number one, there isn't a second round of stimulus at this point. And number two, you know, if I want to know what's happening in my county with the coronavirus, the best place to go is to the state health office.
Mona, thank you for calling and sharing your story. Aaron, we have several questions that are related, all about how phone numbers can keep changing. How can we report a phone number when every single time we get a call, it's a different phone number? Jim says the same company has used random local numbers. The local school district in Maine General is the false front. We've all had that happen. I don't even answer my phone if I don't recognize the phone number. How hard is it for you all to investigate these calls that come from these randomized phone numbers? And is it still valuable to get those numbers from the public?
Well, so I do want to recognize it is like throwing a starfish into the sea, right, when you get these numbers. And, you know, maybe you're able to track down at least that line. But, you know, and this goes to the scam that we just heard from Mona about, right? There is this ability through technology now for imposters, for those who want to mask their identity, for those who want to take advantage of anonymity, to use technology to make it very hard, even with our current systems, to chase them down. Because it's not only if we have a number, but quite often, if the numbers are not masked, they also come up as unknown. So, you know, we can't say that every single number that we're able to upload into a database that's collecting all of these different reports from around the country, you know, can't say that it's going to be the silver bullet, but it's still important to get all the information that we can. So not even just the phone number, right? Because when you call our office, we're not just getting the phone number. We're also asking information about, well, what was it that they were saying that they wanted to do, and what did they ask you, so that we can get that other information about, you know, the totality of the scam. So please don't be dissuaded. That goes back to the first question I think you asked of me, Jennifer, which is, you know, are we sure people are calling? And if people think that there's not going to be value to their call, we might not hear from them, and that we might miss some important evidence if we don't get that call.
And Is there a law regulating this? Is what these scammers are doing when they're calling you from all these different phone numbers, is that even legal?
The technology allows them to do it, but to the extent that they can be identified, they wouldn't be allowed. They wouldn't be. It would not be appropriate for them to be doing that. It would not be legal for them to be doing that. We're just going to fine them to hold them accountable.
Who are they?
If I knew, we'd be in a better situation, right?
I mean specifically, but I mean, you know, we hear about, you hear about the Russian hackers and the elections and things like that. Are there places in the world where there are, I'm getting a call right now from unknown as I speak. Are there people in the world that where there's sort of hot spots of these scams?
Yeah, I mean, the only, the one that I can immediately recall is there was an outfit stationed out of India that after a significant investigation, you know, by states and by the federal government, they were able to shut down a shop there. The reality is that there isn't any one place where somebody might do better or worse by engaging this activity. And that's also why it's important that the FTC is involved, right? Because the state of Maine, you know, we have jurisdiction over what's happening here, but we can't necessarily control what's happening in New Hampshire. We can't control what's happening in India. But with the federal government collecting up all this information, they may actually be able to find the person or pursue the person outside of the territorial boundaries of the United States. So that's not really a clear answer to your question, except to say that it's hard to track these down, and they're not limited by any national boundaries.
We are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions and comments. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Andrucki and King, representing clients in all areas of family law, civil litigation, and criminal defense in state and federal courts, AndruckiLaw.com. And UNE's Center for Global Humanities with What Makes Systemic Racism Systemic, a live online lecture from author and scholar Eduardo Bonilla Silva, Monday, September 28th at 6 p.m., streaming at une.edu.
Sean Walsh, head ice hockey coach of the University of Maine Black Bears, died in Bangor on September 24th, 2001. He served as coach of the University of Maine hockey team from 1984 until his death. Four times he coached his teams to the Hockey East Championship and twice took them to the NCAA Championship in 1993 and 1999. 35 of his players ended up playing in the National Hockey League. In his 17-year career, he compiled a 399-215-44 record. The program he built at Maine outlives him, where he has been referred to as the father of Maine hockey.
On This Day in Maine's History was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of Dean Wealth Advisors and the Maine Seacoast Mission. Happy birthday, Maine! The Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus is on a twice-a-week schedule, on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On these 2 days, it will normally happen at around 2 o'clock each weekday afternoon. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, the briefings are archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and others is normally scheduled for Tuesdays and Thursdays each week and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today's topic, scams and fraud, many of them COVID-related. What to do about them? Joining me, Seth Bofelli with AARP Fraud Watch's network team, and Aaron Fry, who's the Maine Attorney General. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Lots of calls and questions coming in, so if you want to get one in, be quick about it. We're going to go to Ellen calling from Surrey. Hi, Ellen. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, can you hear?
I can. Go ahead.
Hello. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. bring up something that's not a scam, which is ongoing census surveys. I work for the Census Bureau on surveys. The surveys are being conducted by phone only now because a lot of our field reps are in high-risk groups. We have a lot of elderly people working as field reps and conducting this survey.
Ellen, you're cutting out just a little bit. And if you have your radio on, go ahead and turn it down. I'm going to ask you a question. I hope we can hear your answer. How does someone know that it's a legitimate census taker who is calling them? What is something that a census taker would never ask?
Okay. A census taker would ask you for money.
All right. Would a census taker... Would they ask you for your Social Security number?
Right. In the survey.
Okay. You know what? You're cutting out, Ellen. I'm sorry. And I'm going to turn to Aaron because I think this is really important. We all know how important it is for the census to be accurate. And it is indeed true that census takers are calling people, visiting their homes, trying all sorts of ways to get a hold of them. Aaron, how does someone know that a census taker is legitimate?
Certainly that collateral, the opportunity for that collateral investigation that I mentioned earlier with respect to David's call. You know, I guess I'm a little bit surprised to learn that the census may be asking for the Social Security numbers. When I did the census, I did it online through a portal there, and I don't remember having to enter that kind of personal information. If it's something that is as important as the census, and if their credentials just are not there to satisfy you that, you know, this cold call or this email relates to a legitimate government purpose, the census has a significant web presence. The Maine Secretary of State's office has information about the census and how you can participate. And so if, the government will call you to let you know that there might be an issue, but typically they're not asking for personal or financial information because they probably already had that information before they called. So just that collateral investigation is really important if you want to do the right thing by participating in something like the census, but you're not sure that the person that you're talking with is indeed from the census.
We'll go to Robert, who's calling from Medway. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. First of all, I do scam baiting with spare time because I'm old and I don't have a job. But I noticed on Facebook there seems to be two types of scams. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I didn't hear any feedback. The first scams are like a car or a camper or a pickup truck, and they're selling for $1,500. So if you click the more information link, it takes you to a web page that has an email that you have to contact them. And it seems to be a fairly standard advance fee scam that they run from those pages. And they want you to send the money and they will ship the item through eBay shipping. And those are pretty straightforward scams. But the other one that I actually fell for was a $19.99 item on Facebook. It was a set of five cast iron cookware. And when you click the purchase, it goes directly to a PayPal is the only option. They don't give you a credit card or check or, you know, any other way to pay for it. And I think they do that because a lot of people might not realize that PayPal will dispute a purchase. And so I was able to get my money back on that one. But I just... keep doing this good work because people are falling for this stuff all the time.
Robert, thank you for your call. We're going to move on to Jerry, who's calling from Powinol. Hi, Jerry. Go ahead.
Hi. I just had like three ways of getting rid of scams. My aunt had a very ingenious way. She would answer the phone because she knew nobody would call at that certain hour, and then make it like she was a recluse and hadn't talked to anybody for like 2 months, and they would hang up immediately. But the way I do it is I've gotten a lot of people calling saying they're from the IRS or from the Social Security, and my answer to them when I do answer is, remember, you have my address. If you're from the IRS or from the Social Security, you have my address, you have my email, put it in writing and I'll get back to you. And that precipitates an immediate click. And that one about the COVID, when they say the friend has it, I would just recommend saying, oh, really? Okay. Thank you very much. I will call him or her up and I will check with her and see how things are going. And then maybe based on that, I could get back to you. Could I have your name, phone number, where I can get in touch with you, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm sure they'll hang up.
Jerry, thank you for those tips. I do think that when they do the contact tracing, they don't name the person that you were exposed to. Isn't that right, Aaron?
That's my understanding. I think they just want to make sure people understand that they may have been exposed and to go get an appropriate test.
Right. But those other tips, and I've heard others as well, Seth. I've heard, I know somebody who says to the people who call, hold on just a minute, and then just sets the phone down and walks away. Are those effective?
Well, I think sometimes psychologically for us they're effective because you get to mess back with the people who are messing with you. I think the important thing to realize is that, you know, that this information is shared in this crime community. And so by answering the phone, you're putting yourself on a list of people who are likely to answer the phone, and those numbers get shared over and over and over again. So while you might get some short-term satisfaction, long-term, you're just signing yourself up for even more phone calls.
And I'm wondering, and thank you, Jerry, for your call. Aaron, there is a national Do Not Call registry. The folks doing these scams don't really care if you're on that, do they?
No, they don't. And that goes to this, you know, notion that they're not calling you for a legitimate purpose in the first place. You know, but again, the more evidence that we can get from, you know, this type of activity that we can upload, you know, that does allow for some chasing down that chain.
An email from David. I just heard a story recently that malware could be placed on your computer from phony emails that you unsubscribe from. Should you not unsubscribe from emails and just block the email address instead? Seth, you want to take that one?
I think that's definitely the case. You know, I talked before about a phishing email I got, and there were 6 unsubscribe links on it. And so that was a sign they wanted me to click on something in that email, because that something was going to download malware. If you have a good virus protection on your computer, if you have a good spam blocker on your whatever your email service is, utilize those. Rather than clicking on the unsubscribe links, that's always going to be safer.
All right. The one thing I've learned, though, is that if you have a good spam filter, sometimes you have to check that spam mailbox, because sometimes legitimate mail does get through or it goes into that. We're going to go to Daniel calling from Brunswick. Hi, Daniel. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to add a little piece to the comment that they made about it's what's in the headlines in the newspaper. I had a situation yesterday. I was recently in an article in the local newspaper, and I got a call from somebody being very insistent about sending me a digital copy of the article. And I asked them why I would want that and pressed them with a bunch of questions, and they just had a bunch of gobbledygook for me, and I finally just said I wasn't interested and hung up. But I just found it, you know, they had taken information out of the article and were using that to try and sort of sweet talk me up and get me to go for it. I just found an interesting new twist.
Well, Daniel, I'm so glad that you were able to figure it out. We'll move on to John, who's calling from Walderboro. Hi, John, go ahead.
Hi. I am a little concerned about the lack of technical understanding that many people seem to have about the cell phone scam calls. The biggest issue is these phony numbers coming in that people are basically hijacking the scammers. It's an extremely easy fix, and yet nobody brings it up and no one does it. the system, the cell phone system, not only uses the telephone number that you are assigned, but every single cell phone has an identifying chip in it, which is unique. And that is matching your telephone number. It's not done just by telephone. In the earlier days, this is how the cell phone companies billed you. And their computers take both of these bits of information, your cell phone number and the identifying chip number in your cell phone. All they have to do is tell their computer, does this phone number that is being sent out as the calling phone number match the ID of the chip in their phone? If it does, let the phone call go through.
So, John, we're really, really tight on time. Can you quickly explain if it's this is simple? How, if it's this simple, how should people undo it?
The cell phone companies have to do it. They have to be told to do it. The system is already there. All they have to do is tell the computer do it.
So we can call our own cell phone company and say we no longer want robocalls. Fix us?
No, you can't. Our politicians have to, because it has to be done as a blanket. It can't be done for each individual phone number. They have to tell their computer, if these numbers do not match each other, it's a scam call.
All right. John, thank you for your call. And Aaron, we have about a minute left. What do you know about this? And is there legislation in process that would make it much more difficult for scammers to call us?
Well, it would only really work if it was federal legislation. And I actually don't know the status of whether or not there's anything under consideration. Companies, you know, your cell phone companies, they would benefit from making this technology available. I do think that there are some companies who are ahead of the game who are not waiting for government to try to figure out some way to provide some relief for their consumers, because, look, they don't want the headache either from consumers being scammed. But if it's going to be done in a more meaningful way, then John's right that it would have to be sort of a level playing field for everybody, and Congress is in the best position to make that happen.
John, thank you so much for your call. And before we go, I want to repeat the number that you have given Aaron Fry, the Consumer Protection Line at the Attorney General's Office. Tell me if I got this right. 1-800-436-2131. We'll also post that on our webpage and our Facebook page. I want to thank both of you for being us today. Aaron, was that correct?
Yes. Thank you,
Jennifer. Great. Aaron Fry, the Attorney General for the state of Maine, and Seth Bofelli, an advisor with AARP Fraud Watch, their network team. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Today's program will be rebroadcast at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Stay tuned for the Maine CDC briefing with Director Nirav Shah. That is next on Maine Public Radio, television, Facebook, and our website. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.